Hey, everybody, this is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman back for the 37th, count them, 37 Zoom calls on election protection. This is the Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition. We are coming to you on PRN in my usual Green Power and Wellness Show slot, which runs at 5 p.m. on Thursdays. Welcome all our listeners at PRN. We're going to go for 90 minutes. You'll be with us for 60. If you want to join us for the last half hour, go to www.electionprotection2024.org and pick up the link, and you can stay on for the last half hour. But these calls are all Zoomed. They're all recorded. They're all archived. Thanks to Mike Hirsch, our engineer, and Steve Caruso, our webmaster. Again, it's www.electionprotection2024.org. But those of you in PRN land, welcome and glad to have you with us. We'll sign off about an hour in, and then you can, as I say, jump over to the Zoom. We've got 72 people now on the call. It's great to see everybody. And we've got a pretty good, strong agenda today. We're going to start with some, we emphasize on these calls, people can actually do something about something. And that we have a major decision coming up in New York State about some horrendous voting machines that the state wants to certify. We've got Lulu Freestad and Howie Hawkins and hopefully Julie Wiener going to join us about that. Then we're going to have to talk to Daniel Blackman, who ran for the Public Service Commission in Georgia and wound up that in at least 19 of the 159 counties in Georgia, his race or his name were not on the ballot. Small detail there. So that could be the fulcrum of a major lawsuit. We're then going to talk to Ray McClendon and other folks about organizing, going door to door grassroots campaigning in Georgia, and also what happened in Michigan and how we can turn that into a long term a campaign for at least for the next 4 years. Some of us know what we're going to be doing. We're going to be fighting for election protection. And I will mention, by the way, that there is a major op-ed today in the Los Angeles Times, of all places, about DC statehood and how all of that fits into the question of democracy in this country. So we're going to, and I see Elsa Schaefer, I wanted you to jump in. You talked last week about democracy centers that people have been setting up in neighborhoods. And I'd like you to chime in on that. We're joined also by the great Steve Rosenfeld. Steven has been writing for Voting Booth. His stuff goes all over the internet. And he and I had a long talk yesterday about the House Rule 1. And so we're going to, Laura has already asked for that. That'll be later in the call, but it's going to go deep and certainly interface with what Ray McClendon is going to tell us about Georgia and what happened there and the great victory that we had there and also in Michigan. And Carolina Miranda, who's new to the call, is also going to join us, talk about her experiences going door to door. So that's pretty much it. We will then stay on later if you if you want to kibitz afterwards. The recording will stop at 6:40, 3:40 California time, but then we can hang out and kibitz a little longer if people want. Okay, are we good? Does anybody have a question or comment before we jump into this incredible fight in New York State? Really outrageous. I'll leave it to Lulu, who's an experienced moderator and one of our great campaigners, and Howie Hawkins from the Green Party. I don't see Julie Wiener on there. If you are, raise your hand, Julie. But Lulu, go ahead, please, and tell us what's going on in New York and how we specifically can have an impact.
Thanks so much, Harvey. Thanks for focusing on this. So we won a pretty big battle on the 14th, which is like, yay, those victories are few and far between. So we should really celebrate. We just need to keep in mind that it was a temporary battle. There was a bunch of information going around that we won the whole thing and, you know, no need to do any more action. And that is just not correct. So just to bring people up to speed, what happened, what's going on in New York, as many people know, is that they are in the process of trying to certify a voting machine called the Express Vote XL. And that's a hybrid voting machine. It does combine the the printer and the scanner in one functionality. And the very, very bad part of that is that then after the ballot is cast by the voter, or it's not even really a ballot, it's a summary card. I hate to call it a ballot. It's a thermal paper summary card. And then the voter casts it, and then it passes under the print head. And security experts have said that it could add, change, or even delete votes. Jesus. And at that point, your summary card, or what they're considering a ballot, is literally no longer able to confirm elections with an audit. And it was really interesting. I talked to Andrew Appel about technically how that could happen. Like, how could it actually change your vote? So this is what he explained to me. This is how it could work. So you have that summary card. It's actually printed by the computer, right? Because it's a total touchscreen machine. So you're not filling out anything with your pen anymore. You're touching a screen and it's printing out the summary card. So say it's under the control of malware. All it has to do is just leave one of the candidates off of your summary card. So say you've got like 16 candidates on that summary card and it leaves one off. You're probably not going to notice. There's, you know, still 15 candidates on there. And most people, they found, do not actually review those summary cards, on top of which it's behind glass. It's actually very difficult to see. So, you know, you cast it, it's left off that particular vote. Maybe it's a vote for president. You know, maybe it left off your vote for president. Then when it passes back under the printhead, it can just fill in that vote for president. So it doesn't matter who you actually voted for. That ballot is going to print, if it's under the control of malware, that machine is going to print whatever it wants on that summary card. On top of which, the summary cards have barcodes, and it's the barcode that is actually counted by the machine. So there's many other problems. It could print your actual candidates on the summary card and still print something different in the barcode. It'd be pretty much impossible for you to know. So we're fighting these machines tooth and nail. We do not want them certified. And what happened on January 14th at the meeting, the New York State Board of Elections decided not to certify the Express Vote XL at that meeting. So they kind of kicked the can down the road a little bit, but at least we held the line. We sent over all collectively, and I see people on this call that were part of this, Emily Levy, and I saw Dan Wolf on here, who both spoke at the meeting, and other people who helped us. I know people who wrote letters. We sent over 400 letters to the New York State Board of Elections, and all of those, over 300 letters to New York legislators. And those legislators let us know that they noticed. We had legislators talk to us on forums and say that they were getting an email from us literally like every few minutes, another email would pop up. So believe me, they are noticing. So we held the line on the 14th, but we have to hold it again on the 28th. So they're gonna have their actual real vote on the 28th. And what we're doing right now, actually, there's two things that we want to happen on the 28th. We want them to vote no to the certification of the Express Vote XL. We're hopeful that they're going to do that. We also want them to vote no on this other piece of equipment. This is a little bit in the weeds, but it turns out that they're trying to certify an update to a high-speed scanner called the DS850. When they update that scanner, it will no longer be compatible with the ballot marking device we're using now in New York City called the AutoMark. Well, what would New York City do? How would they replace the AutoMark? Oh, conveniently enough, they would have to use the Express Vote XL, the machine that we're fighting. So we don't want this update to the DS850, and we don't want the machine certified. And we have a new letter for you to sign on, and I put it into the chat. Even further, we are going off of defense and onto offense. We are asking the New York State Legislature to pass legislation banning all hybrid voting machines with this issue. And if we could do that, if we could pass this legislation in New York, it's possible we could get it passed in other states around the country and maybe even federally. So this is huge. Really, really big, and we want you to participate. So send this letter to the New York legislature. It takes literally like 3 minutes, and you can, you know, it preloads for you. It's one of those one-click letters. You can send the letter as is, you can write your own letter, whatever you want. It's going to go to all the New York legislators and tell them, pass legislation banning hybrid voting machines, because we don't want to be there at the Board of Elections meeting, like, you know, month after month, having to watch out and see if they're going to slip it through. We want legislation to protect us. So I'll put the link in the chat again. Please send the letter. I see Laura describe the AutoMark machine to us for a minute. So the AutoMark is the previous generation of ballot marking devices from ES&S. And we work with disability advocates at my group. Our group is called Smart Elections. That's the group I co-founded. I'm the executive director there. And one of our main missions is to try to connect people from different communities that are working on elections. And we've done a lot of outreach to voters with disabilities. We have a disability advocate on our action council. I attend disability advocacy meetings, and it's been really important. I really, really encourage you in your own communities to reach out to disability advocates, bring them into your community. That conversation is so important. So one of the things that I learned from being involved more with disability advocates is that the AutoMark is by far the ballot marking device that is preferred by pretty much any disability advocate that I've spoken to. They find it comfortable to vote on. It does not make a ballot that looks different from other ballots. Prints out a paper ballot that looks just like the ballots that able-bodied voters are voting with, so they don't feel their privacy is violated. It doesn't tabulate the vote, so it's safer in that regard. So the AutoMark is really the preferred system of many voters with disabilities. And the idea that they're gonna pass software now to make it obsolete is very disturbing. And it's one of the same things that we see tech companies do when they want to try to sell new expensive hardware. They try to make their old hardware obsolete. So we're pushing back. So the letter says, please pass legislation banning hybrid voting machines. Please let the board know not to certify the DS850 until it's compatible with the AutoMark. And we're also actually asking for funding for the New York State Board of Elections, because it turns out that their funding hasn't come through and they are literally broke and don't have the money to like pay their staff. And so one of the things that we're also trying to do is work cooperatively with these boards. So we're advocating for them to get their funding. So those are the three things that are happening in that letter. I'm going to put it into the chat. And then we also really encourage you to come to our forum tomorrow. It's Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're actually gonna have Andrew Appel, one of the leading election security experts who's been writing about this for years. He was one of the first people to demonstrate this problem. He's gonna be on the forum, and also Tina Barton, who is the, she's the clerk in Rochester Hills, Michigan. She was one of the clerks that did the risk limiting audit in Antrim County, when they counted all those ballots by hand because of the miscount in Antrim County, Michigan. Her county, she's in Rochester Hills, which is a different city, and she's gonna talk to us about the risk limiting audits that they're doing there. I personally have mixed feelings about risk limiting audits, but they're a heck of a lot better than a lot of what we're doing now, which is no audits at all. So that's tomorrow night.
How do people get a hold of you? Put your link in the chat, if you would, your website. You have a gathering tomorrow on Zoom?
It's not on Zoom, it's on YouTube and Facebook. And if you sign up, we'll send you the links. We're gonna be sending the links out tonight. So okay. The best thing to do is to sign up, and then you get on our mailing list, and we send you that information on a regular basis. So here's the link.
How is it if people from out of state send this letter into New York?
It's been great. It's been great. The New York legislators came, like I was at a forum and they were like, oh my God, we're getting letters from people all over the country. And what you can say, which is true, is that New York traditionally has been a leader in election security, and say that you want New York to hold the line. You want New York to make good decisions on election security, because that will set an example for election officials in your state. And you want these high standards held. So you have a perfectly legitimate argument for why you're sending them this letter.
Okay, great, very good. Harry Hawkins, you're in New York with the Green Party. Have you been working on this, and what's your two cents worth on this?
Yeah, I was at the hearing last week. I made a statement, sent in a statement. And Lulu, I have a question, because at the end of the meeting, they said, well, we can't decide on this because staff hasn't written us a resolution. And that seemed to be the excuse to kick it down till coming Thursday. Have you seen the resolution that staff has drafted?
No, I haven't. And they don't generally circulate that publicly, I don't think. You could do a public records request, but by the time you get it, you know, the meeting would be over. I think what they generally indicated was that at this point, because there are actual ways in which the Express Vote XL violates New York election law. And so they're going on these kind of like technicalities right now, saying that they don't think they can certify the Express Vote XL right now. But we don't know how long right now is. What does that mean? Like a month from now, ESNS is going to come back and say, like, we fixed those technicalities. Like, one is a pop-up. There's apparently a software pop-up that comes up and prevents you from verifying your vote. I have to believe that they have at least some vaguely competent engineers that could fix that. So the problem is, we don't want them to come back next month, you know, and say, oh, that's all fixed, we're going to pass it now. So what we understood from that resolution, Howie, is that they would at least tentatively not certify the Express Vote XL, but then they said yes, that they were going to certify all these other components, which include three scanners and their election management systems. And so, and they're also going to certify the Dominion upgrade, which we haven't heard that there's any specific problems about.
This is something that everybody on the call can have an impact. You know, don't be shy about not being a NIACA, and you can send this sign on the letter. It takes 3 minutes, send it in, and maybe we can stop this. How did New York vote in 2020? Was it mostly on paper?
Yeah, our primary method of voting right now is hand-marked paper ballots with, you know, ballot marking devices for voters with disabilities. And ESNS is not making enough money, I guess, from that system. And they want what they call universal use ballot marking devices. They want everybody to vote on an $8,000 ballot marking device. And you'd probably need at least two for each polling location. So that's, it's just a huge ka-ching for them in terms of, you know, the money they can make by selling those ballot marking devices.
Wow. So it's a scam, basically. Why don't the pen manufacturers get involved in this and push their pens so that we can... Anyway, okay, bad joke. So actually, New York had a very good election in 2020 in terms of procedures. People got paper ballots. They marked them. Were they scanned? Were they digitally scanned?
Yeah, they're scanned. And then in New York, they have a mandatory 3% audit of all the voting machines. I have to say, there's a lot of problems with New York elections. I'm not saying like New York elections are great. There's a lot of political cronyism here, and we're concerned there could be corruption, and very suspicious things happened. Like in the 2016 primary of Bernie Sanders against Clinton in Brooklyn, they somehow deleted 200,000 voters from the rolls. Right. That wasn't an accident. You know, then or afterwards, you know, that's Brooklyn. That's like Bernie's hometown. Then afterwards, oh, they went like, oh, whoops, made a mistake. And they put everybody back on the rolls. But those people didn't get to vote. So there's a lot of we're working on trying to sort out the corruption issues from the issues of corruption versus issues of incompetence, and kind of get into a more efficient, technically sophisticated management of the Board of Elections. But those are long-term goals that we have about New York election reform. For right now, what we're focusing on is at least holding the line. We don't want our election equipment to get worse, and we want to hold a high example to other states. If this legislation passes, we'll push it out as a template into other states.
All right, very good, very good. Anybody got any questions for Lulu or Howie? Howie, anything you want to add? Okay.
I would just like to say that we now have Alex Padilla in the Senate who did the same thing to the burn in California.
Yes, right. The votes mysteriously disappeared in California in precisely the precincts that Bernie would have won as well. So we are nonpartisan. Republicans and Democrats alike steal elections, and we gotta deal with it. Myla Reason and then Jed Pauker.
Harvey, I don't have, it's Jennifer. My Zoom's not working. I just want to say something too.
Okay, go ahead, Jennifer, and then Myla, and then Jed.
Yeah, what I wanted to say is that this thing that Lou was talking about in New York, we have the same thing in California. The print head is on the same machine as the ballot marking device. So if we win in New York, we can bring that back to California and say, and hopefully get rid of it. So thank you.
Great, good point, absolutely.
Jennifer's been working to help us in New York. Thank you, Jennifer.
Hi, Lulu. I just have a question. I've got the Write to New York Officials page open on your Smart Elections website. And I'm wondering, do you want us to write to all of these officials? And because I thought I heard you saying that we should just be writing to the commissioners. Did I hear that?
Yeah, I don't think we've completely updated the website. I just finished, I got the letter approved by our attorney at like midnight last night, and I haven't. So I think the link on the website right now goes to the previous letter that we were sending to the commissioners. You can still send that letter. So the best right now, what we really want is you to send a letter to the New York legislators. And I put that link into the chat, and I'll get that up on our website as soon as possible. But this is the best letter to send right now.
Okay, great.
So, just for clarification, the letter to the legislators is where? At some place in the chat? Could you just post it again? Because there's so much in the chat, it's kind of hard to wade through it all.
Yeah, of course, Myla. I just posted it right now. It says, this is the best letter to send right now. And that's for New York.
Okay. Well, here's a place we can have a clear impact. Jed Pauker, and then Laura Chamberlain, you still have a hand up. Go ahead, Jed.
Yeah, thanks. She asked my question, so I'm good to go. Thank you.
Okay, Laura, did you have anything? You would ask something before. Laura Chamberlain?
I just said about the HR1. That's it. So it's okay, still up from there. Sorry.
All right. Thank you, Lulu. This is a place where we can have a definite impact. So let's do it. We have 83 people on the call, 82 people writing. We'll have a big impact. Thank you very much.
Thank you, okay. Harvey.
Thank you. Second, again, you have a call tomorrow night. Tomorrow. What's the time on that?
Oh, sorry, 7 p.m. Eastern time. And I put the link in the chat. And you can also just go to our website, smartelections.us. And I'll try to make sure everything on the website is updated. On the smartelections.us, you can sign up for the forum tomorrow night.
Wonderful. Okay, thank Harvey. You. Thank you, Lou. And keep up your great work.
Thanks, Harvey.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I heard someone. I heard a voice.
Harvey?
Yeah, Pete, go ahead real quick.
Yeah, maybe you could fill me in. I didn't notice anything in the draft letter that's in chat about how the ESNS machines are inconsistent with New York state law. Is that going to be in the next draft, Lulu?
We didn't want to get into the weeds too much. It gets to be kind of overwhelming for people, but I can tell you the ways that it doesn't, that as far as that we've been able to identify that it violates New York law. And you're welcome to write the commissioners also. As Myla said, all of their emails are on our website, and I'll put the page on our website where you can write them individually. If you feel impassioned, it's great for them to hear from you. So there's two ways specifically, possibly more, that the Express Vote Excel violates New York law. One, New York law requires that the voter be able to verify their choices between the DRE screen and the actual printed card. And what happens when you vote on this current version of the Express Vote Excel is when your card is there for you to verify, this pop-up comes up and covers your choices on the screen. So you literally cannot verify your choices. I have to wonder if it's intentional also, like, does it make it easier to cheat? Because your choices are blocked. But you know, who knows if it's intentional? It exists, it's a pop-up. And so the commissioners acknowledge that that violates New York election law. Number two, New York election law requires in certain communities with a certain percentage of non-English speaking population that the ballots be printed in their language. And these Express Vote Excel summary cards, they only print in English. Voters can see different languages on the screen, but the card itself only prints in English. That violates New York election law. We also think that the ballots fall in order. And because of that, it's in a very small space and there's small cards that fall in order. It might be possible to determine how people vote because people check in order and might vote in order. And so it's also possible that there's privacy violation there. We're not sure, but that's a third potential violation.
Pete is an attorney and the two of you should be in together on this. It's all very interesting. If we can get if you'll come back next week, you and Howie, and fill us in on what happened on the 28th, that'll be great.
We'll do, Harvey. Okay? Thanks and for all your advocacy. You've been so helpful.
Well, you too, and you're one of the great heroes of this movement. And if you'll be directly in touch with Pete Pekarsky on the legalities, he's an attorney and maybe can help on that. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Pete and I are in touch. Pete, shoot me an email.
All right, thank you. Okay, moving on, we are joined by Daniel Blackman. Thank you for all that in New York. Daniel Blackman was on the call before. He ran for the Public Service Commission in Georgia in the recent double Senate race. He was the third man on the ballot there in terms of running for PSC. Apparently, in at least 19 counties in this huge race, and I want to say, by the way, Daniel in the polls prior to this race was ahead of both Warnock and Ossoff. And we believe that his race had a definite impact on the turnout, because the Georgia Public Service Commission deals with issues having to do with broadband, which is a big issue, especially in rural Georgia, and electric rates. And Georgia, as you've heard before on the call, is about to get hit with the last two nuclear power plants in the United States that are coming in at around, if they're lucky, at a mere $30 billion. So Daniel's race was critical. Now it turns out that he may not have been on the ballot in some 19 counties. Daniel, can you tell us what went on?
Yeah, first of all, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Well, first of all, Happy New Year to everyone. And for the support that I received, I want to let you guys know that we're very privileged. We got the most votes in the history of the Public Service Commission. And I was the largest vote getter of any African-American from Obama to Stacey Abrams. We did a tremendous amount of work. And as Harvey stated, we were ahead of the polls ahead of Warnock and Ossoff. Unfortunately, on the day of the election, we were at one point ahead by somewhere around 150,000 votes. But as a result, the election was certified about a week ago, and we actually lost the election by somewhere around the gap was around 33,000 vote differential. The problem we had was that when this race first started, we built up a lot of momentum. I'm not sure if there's ever been a Public Service Commission race with this much national and statewide attention. We were able to make a lot of strides, but the problem was when we made the runoff, we got 47.8% of the vote on November 3rd. Our opponent got 49.4% or 49.5% of the vote. The problem was the Secretary of State in Georgia did not change our runoff until about 11 to 12 days after we won the runoff. And what that means, that we won the general. Made it into a runoff from the general, excuse me. And here's the issue. Initially, because this was a statewide race and not a federal race, we were expecting to have a December 1st runoff election. But because the U.S. Senate races garnered so much attention, they coupled our race in with the Ossoff, Warnock, Perdue, Loeffler race. And that actually worked to our advantage as far as turnout is concerned. The problem is that for a 2 to 3 week period, we realized that ballots went out prior to the announcement of us being on the Public Service Commission in the runoff, which means that several counties sent out ballots early that didn't have the PSC on their ballot. As a result, we were unsuccessful. We lost the election by around 32 or 33,000 votes. We all know, and I'm very, very proud to say that we had a lot to do with supporting both Reverend Warnock and John Ossoff in winning. And unfortunately, even though they won, and I got more votes than Kelly Loeffler, we ended up coming short, and we still haven't really figured out all the metrics. But it as of right now, based on what was reported from the precincts, that's how the numbers flow towards our end. Now, we understand that there are Democrats that may not have voted for all three of us. We get that. The challenge we faced is that 291 people since the election said that they either did not see our name on it, or they did not see the Public Service Commission race. And as Harvey stated, it's not 19 counties, it's 39 counties that of individuals that say that our race may not have been on the ballot. So we currently have an attorney that we're retaining. We're looking at if an investigation needs to be taken. We're looking at considering auditing the election, because it's very important for us to understand what happened. Now, I'm going to be honest with you guys. I don't know if there are 1,300 folks out there that ballot wasn't counted, or if there are 58,000 people. We just don't know. Something similar happened in 2018 with Stacey Abrams, where we saw some of the challenges she faced when she ran for governor. Our challenge is a little bit different, in so much that we know for a fact in counties like DeKalb, Gwinnett, Fulton, where there are high Democratic and African-American turnout, our name may have been left off. We don't know what the extent of that is, but we're currently looking to see if it's something that we're able to pursue. So I want to be very respectful of time, and I want to thank you guys for the work you're doing nationally. I want to thank Harvey for always opening this space. And I think someone said the proportion of Democratic versus Republican. There was a drop off, interestingly enough. I don't have the numbers in front of me. I'll send them to Harvey. He can send them to the group. There was a tremendous drop off between Ossoff and myself and Warnock. One of the most trying cases we saw was there was one precinct in Georgia where 3,500 people voted. And for whatever reason, my vote number went from Ossoff got 3,500, Warnock got 3,600, and I got like 450 votes. And we were really concerned because our vote total had not dropped like that in other precincts with comparable numbers. So again, I know that there was a tremendous amount of pressure in Georgia. I'm not ready to just raise a red flag of anyone that was manipulating the election, but we are concerned that ballots may have gone out that didn't have our race on it because it wasn't done in enough time when the Secretary of State made the announcement, and we don't know if those were changed. We're currently looking into it, and I'll keep you posted, but the election was certified last week, so we're looking at every option possible with limited resources, but we do want to make sure in the event that we're not able to get an investigation that this never happens again in Georgia, especially with the potential of Stacey Abrams running in 2022 with other Democrats. And we don't want to go backwards. We want to continue in our progress. So thank you guys so much. And if there are any questions, I'll be happy to answer it.
Well, we got to understand this is a very big deal. I mean, we're talking about the last two nuclear plants in the United States. The rate impacts are going to be decided on a public service commission, which has never had an African-American on it. Your opponent's name was Bubba McDonald. I'm thinking of changing my nickname from Sluggo to Bubba. So I have to take a vote on that. But, you know, this is a huge deal. Daniel is going to get me a memo in the next couple of days, and I will forward it to everybody on the list. You're not obviously able to do it right now. I think you're the only one on the call who's actually outside. So, Lulu, did you want to ask something? You said you had your hand there. Is that right? Lulu, let's unmute you here. Did I misunderstand? Yeah.
Did you compare any of the poll tape results, the poll tapes that are printed out with the published results?
Last week we filed an open records request, and we are looking at comparing those numbers through an audit, but we haven't done the exact method that you just stated. I'll definitely look into that because it's very important for us to understand what happened just to have a peace of mind about
the we have some poll tapes, the ones that Emily's team at Scrutineers paid for and had their team photograph. Smart Elections has them already transcribed in a spreadsheet. So I'd have to look and see if we have your race in our spreadsheets, but if not, we can go back and try to add that. I can talk to our team about trying to do the comparisons. We don't have all the poll tapes, but we have about 300 of them. So it's a sample, and Emily would know more about that sample. So we'll take a look at what we've got.
Daniel,
how do people get a hold of you?
I'll go ahead and put my email and my number. I'm very accessible. My phone number for anyone, and I'll put in the chat space, is 404-437-3979. And again, my name is Daniel Blackman, and the email is pretty simple. It's Daniel, D-A-N-I-E-L, 4 F-O-R, and then Georgia, G-E-O-R-G-I-A, @gmail.com. That's Daniel for Georgia @gmail.com. I see another hand raised, Harvey. I'm not sure who
that person is. Yes, Laura and then Emily.
Yes. Daniel, hi. I don't understand I don't understand why you're not suing the Secretary of State for a new election, because you were dropped from the ballot. Have you done a records request for the ballots themselves in the counties or the precincts that you think you were dropped?
So here's what the process was. When we found out about this, it was a week after the election, because we were obviously concerned about why our name wasn't on certain ballots. So what we did was we just put out a request to the Secretary of State's office that went to ask when the election was certified, would be certified, and when we would be able to verify the election or contest it. Well, within a 3-day period, we got people that reached out directly saying, hey, wish we could have voted for you. And that's when we were alarmed, because we were like, look, it was statewide. What do you mean you wish you could have voted for us? And when we started seeing emails and requests saying your race wasn't on the ballot, we put out a personal call to action, and we got 291 people in about a 6-day period that said they didn't see our race on the ballot. So we currently, that was about 2 weeks ago. So we reached out to the Secretary of State's office. We actually have a photo image of an actual ballot that had the two U.S. Senate seats, but it didn't have the Public Service Commission. The Secretary of State said that they figured that was supposed to be a military ballot and our race may not have been on there. Our concern was, and what our attorney said was, no, if you're military, then you can still vote statewide. If you're permanent overseas, you can only vote in the federal election. So there were discrepancies. So now that we've compiled all of our evidence, we're resubmitting that to the Secretary of State's office. And if we don't get an investigation, then the next steps would be potentially to file a lawsuit. But again, that's an expensive process. We have to think everything through. And we are currently consulting with our attorney to figure out what our next step might be.
That's amazing. Amazing. Emily Levy.
Thanks, and thank you so much, Daniel, for being here. So I'm the director of scrutineers.org, which Lulu mentioned that we did a project where we hired folks on the ground in Georgia to take photos of poll tapes. And we've looked at the poll tapes that we collected, which is 300 to 400 poll tapes, and there aren't any precincts where no votes registered for you. There may be some where there's a significant drop off, like you said, and we could look at that. The other thing I want to make sure that you're aware of is that the Democratic Party's poll watchers were trained. It was part of their duties, the poll watchers that were watching the polls for the Democratic Party, to take photos of the poll tapes and upload them with their end of day reports. So you might want to be, since I know, I believe you're a Democrat, you might want to be in touch with them about whether they should have poll tapes in a lot more places than we did. They should poll tape photos.
No, we'll make that request, and thank you for that.
Sure. Well, Ray Lutz and John Brakey are on the phone there. Also on the call, they're also very expert working with Emily on this poll tape situation. So you've got a lot of expertise to draw in from this group, and this is really critical. I mean, this is a hugely important piece of the whole puzzle. There's no doubt that your race was very instrumental in bringing out the turnout for Ossoff and Warnock, but now here you are out in the cold, literally and figuratively. So well, let's try and deal with this. Anyone else want to chime in on this? Okay. I know Pete Pekarsky was interested also. You should be in touch with Pete. So this is a very big deal. And as you say, clearly more races are coming up in Georgia, and we can't let something like this go by. Okay.
Thank you, Harvey. Much.
Thank you, everybody. Okay. Let's move on now. Ray McClendon, and we're going to talk about the Georgia miracle. We also want to integrate Steve Rosenfeld to talk about HR1, which is part, of course, of the big picture in moving forward here. And we're joined also by Carolina Miranda. Ray, can you start in, and then Joel will introduce Carolina, and then we'll go to Steve.
Harvey, before we go, can I just ask one quick question of Daniel?
Sure, please.
Daniel, what do you know the latest status of your voting act, a Voting Rights Act lawsuit in Georgia?
Well, we don't actually have an active voting rights lawsuit.
What is the suit that was reaffirmed in January 6th then?
That in my opinion was something that the only lawsuit I was aware of was the one that the Trump administration was trying to file in the state of Georgia against the Secretary of State. We haven't filed one yet. We basically have made a request for the Secretary of State to go for an investigation.
Okay, thanks. I must have misread it then, because it referred to the fact that voting statewide for each of five district public
oh,
service.
Oh, no. I apologize. I thought you meant for the runoff. No, that is currently in Fulton County, Georgia. So they are taking on that case. What he's referencing for those on the phone is the Public Service Commission is there are five districts. The problem is that it's a statewide election. So, for instance, Atlanta is in the third district for the Public Service Commission, which is Fulton, DeKalb, Clayton, highly minority, highly Democratic. But it's a statewide election, which means there are no Democrats on the commission and there are no people of color. So the lawsuit is stating that the races should be done by district and not statewide. And that is one of the questions around the Voting Rights Act and voter suppression. That is currently an ongoing case that they are taking on. So that case will be going forward. And I'll make sure I give you all an update as we get more information here in Georgia. So thank you for that. Sorry for misunderstanding.
Who's the plaintiff on that case?
There are multiple organizations like the Sierra Club is a part of that. The Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. There are a couple of organizations, to my knowledge, that filed that. But we'll see what happens. I mean, I don't want to misspeak for anybody, but I'll make sure I give you guys an update.
Yeah, keep us posted on that one. That's a big one that we want to keep.
The Atlanta NAACP is also a part of that as well. We're active in that. I mean, the way to look at that is to think about John Lewis, who represents the 5th Congressional District of Georgia, if he had to run statewide. I mean, that's essentially what Daniel is up against. And this needs to be changed. It's just another form of voter suppression.
Well, so let's segue into your talk, Ray. And, you know, we're looking at a 4-year plan here to remake our electoral system. HR1, which Steve Roosevelt is going to talk about, is part of that. But we're talking primarily about a universal paper ballots and about dealing with gerrymandering. And of course, DC statehood is also, and Puerto Rico statehood is also part of the dialogue. It's interesting. I've read an anti-statehood piece by, and they're not even making an argument that DC should not be a state. All they're saying is it'll tip the balance, and we can't have that. But you know, Ray, can you proceed, please, with what we're looking at and what we learned in Georgia, and we'll also talk to Carolina Miranda and Steve Roosevelt, please.
Well, thanks, Harvey. There are multiple things that we've learned in Georgia. First and foremost is that when we collaborate, consolidate our resources, and communicate with one another on these kind of causes, we can have a dramatic influence and be the difference. And so we want to thank everyone for coming together with one mind and one focus. And that's what was important. And that's what needs to be replicated around the country. Moreover, what has occurred is that now that people have been energized from the success in Georgia, they want to continue. The various groups that have collaborated are continuing to meet, and they're looking to determine what are the causes and what are the issues that they want to continue to be involved with going forward, so that we in 2022 don't have a repeat of what occurred in 2010 with respect to conservative forces taking or regaining control at different levels. Number two is that we know that we're in the middle of the census, which means redistricting, and that's going to have a further impact on voter suppression. So what's in front of us right now at this moment? Because of the success that we had here in Georgia, there's already a move afoot to move the goalposts once again. So the Senate, State Senate caucus has already come up with concepts that they're looking to introduce in the current legislative session, which would include eliminating no excuse mail-in votes, eliminating drop boxes, and requiring voter ID to be a part of mail-in balloting. The there has been a select committee put together in the House. That House bill in the state legislature is will be marked up here fairly soon, as we understand. So the first order of business for us in terms of galvanizing the energy going, looking forward, is to ensure that we don't go backwards on mail-in voting, which is a key component of voter suppression. And then, of course, we will be looking after that toward redistricting and coming up with a game plan for independent redistricting commissions in the state of Georgia, which is going to be an uphill struggle because, as many of you already know, both the executive branch and both houses of the state legislature are Republican controlled. So because of our wins, we're excited, but by the same token, that means that we got to redouble our efforts because they now see the power from increasing the vote, and they want to curtail that as quickly as possible. In the interest of time, I'll leave it there and answer any questions.
Well, nationwide, we have been talking about doing a double-edged campaign, which number one would go state by state and have referenda that would set up districting commissions, bipartisan, multipartisan districting commissions that would cure gerrymandering. And we won that last week. We heard from Jan Bandor, who's the real deal, and they won this in Michigan. So we now have a multi-partisan, it's not just bipartisan. You have Democrats, you have Republicans, and you have unaffiliateds on a commission that
you
draws
are non-partisan, not multi-partisan, non-partisan.
Non-partisan, okay, yeah, non-partisan. So I mean, we have it in California, we have it in Iowa, now we have it in Michigan. We can do this nationwide. There are about half the states in the country do have initiative and or referendum. And it can be done that way. And so we are looking at curing gerrymandering in at least half the states with statewide referenda. And then the other thing is to mandate universal mailed out paper ballots, which the Georgia legislature has already jumped in to try and prevent, right? Ray, I mean, that's what we've seen, as you've mentioned. So, you know, that's looking at a 4 years worth of work. I mean, the good news is that we do have it. We do have gerrymandering under control, and we do have a formula to do it in at least three states. And we do have some states like Minnesota. Eddie Tripp is on with us from Minnesota, where they have paper ballots. I'm sure there must be other states that have the paper ballots, but that can be mandated, as again was done in Michigan, to have paper ballots. So Ray, I know you do not have the referendum in Georgia, is that correct?
You still have to start with the legislature. The issue is gonna be what they allow to occur. And we're going to have to bring all our resources to bear to get them to move on that, to allow the voters to make a decision on that. And of course, they're going to be opposed to it. So the issue is whether or not we can peel enough Republicans off in order to get the support to at least let the people decide.
Pretty amazing. Well, this is we also, of course, as I said, DC statehood and Puerto Rico statehood have become a big deal. In fact, the LA Times ran an op-ed about something, saying something that we talked about on this call, which is that the incident at the, the insurrection really underscored the need for DC statehood. Because when the mayor tried to call in the National Guard, she had to go through the feds. Whereas if she had been the governor, she would have had the power directly to call out the National Guard. So, you know, that's a big piece of our democracy struggle going forward as well. Joel, would you like to introduce Carolina Miranda? She's going to talk about going door to door and what that was like, and then we'll go to Steve Rosenfeld and jump into HR1.
Yeah, briefly. Hello, everyone. Ray, that was an excellent presentation. So were all the other speakers. I want to recognize and lift up Mike Hirsch, who this is his final evening tonight, who's been helping to organize our Zoom calls. Without Mike and his skill in not only engineering our calls, but make sure they go, you know, they were flowing. To Mike, thank you so much. And I hope that I'll be able to raise some more funding for you so you can continue, because we really need you. Carolina Manundo is one of my dear friends. She is, in my opinion, one of the single most important labor organizers in our country. From, you know, New York City, just moved to North Carolina, was a senior level organizer in the Biden-Harris campaign, and she went door to door both in Florida and Georgia. But what's really important were the experiences that she has in terms of what worked when she went door to door to get people to the polls, and what are we going to learn from all this grassroots organizing that NAACP was involved in. But number two, some of the disturbing things that she heard, that many swing voters said, I'm not voting for a Democrat because they're communist and socialist. But I'll let her tell the rest. But she's that, you know, one of the new generations of election protection warriors. So Carolina, the floor is yours. Muchas gracias para todos.
Thank you so much. Joel, you're so kind. First off, I want to say thank you to everyone. I appreciate the opportunity for speaking up, and I am so excited to share my story. It was definitely a completely different experience in Florida as it was in Georgia, as far as the campaigning for the presidency and the Senate race, of course. So in Florida, I was leading, I was what you call a lead. It was the directors, then the leads, then we had the canvassers. So as a lead, I was in charge of 10 canvassers in my group. I would train them, go to door to door, teach them how to talk to people. We had a lot of role playing. And basically, the real thing, it really comes down to when you go to the doors, is speaking with your heart. You know, we had a thousand people in Georgia with Unite Here. That is it's a union of hospitality workers. So most of these workers that were actually down there helping out with the campaign pretty much all went back home to no jobs, including myself. And it was very easy to go to these doors and tell our stories and why we're doing this and why we're here, and, you know, to explain to the voters why we have to speak up, why we can't tolerate the abuse of, whether it's racism, whether it's sexism, it is just so many different things that we're going through, especially in this time of day, right? And I was telling Joelle, in Florida, my biggest challenge, I believe, was with the Latino community. And it was because, you know, there's a lot of Cubans in Florida. And I was in charge of a Spanish team over there because I was working in Miami. And they have their thoughts on Democrats, it's completely shocking, because they automatically, once you say Democrat, they're like, oh, we're not voting them because, you know, they're communists. Those are communists. And, you know, they're all about socialism. And even the commercials that I would see in Spanish would basically say, don't vote for Democrats, you know, they're communist, and they're going to change our country, and we don't want that, right? So, and they're literally brainwashing the Latino community, which I was just completely in shock, because I'm from New York, and I'm straight Democrat, and I've never experienced something like so many closed-minded people. And I feel like, you know, the Democrats definitely have to work hard on changing that perception and helping and understanding that unity is what's going to help our country as a whole, because only united will we stand strong and won't tolerate exactly what happened at the White House with, you know, the Republicans, unfortunately. But as far as us being able to win that campaign in Georgia, I was actually working in Fulton County. And as far as what Mr. Blackman said, I actually had an experience of one of the voters. Don't ask me which, because there was so many that I got to help to take to the polls. But I do remember one of them telling me that it was easy. There was only two questions on it. So, which was Ossoff and Mr. Warnock. So definitely, I wish I had most of their contacts to see, to be able to call them back, but I'll see if I can try to help out with that as well. And they, with Unite Here, it was 1,000 of us. We did it with the most utmost carefulness as far as, you know, with the COVID, right? We pushed every Democrat to go and vote by mail, the ones that were older, right? So what did we do? We'd go to the doors, we talked to them. If they didn't have stamps, we supplied people with stamps. If we went to the door, there was a lot of people that have no jobs and they couldn't afford to go to the polls. So we got them Uber rides. We rented out every car rental in Georgia as far as Unite Here. We rented out almost, I think it was almost all the hotels over there. We were supplied with hand sanitizer, masks, snacks, wipes, gloves, umbrellas. We worked countless hours as far as leads and directors. We worked literally 13, 14, 15 hour shifts. And it was intense. It was very hard, challenging, because you're working with so many different people, so many different personalities, different health issues, different ethnicities, different, you know, people that live in Florida came to Georgia and it was cold. So, you know, suffering also that season change, and people got sick, but, you know, we got guns pulled out sometimes. We had all types of, you know, some really rough areas, some very uppity areas that were very knowledgeable. We definitely had to educate people left and right, the younger ones especially, because it's the upcoming future. And we got to knock on 1.5 million doors in a matter of 6 weeks. So we definitely did it up over there. And I don't know if anybody has any questions, or I don't know if I'm missing.
That's amazing. A million and a half doors is quite amazing. Steve Rosenfeld, are you good to hang with us for a couple more minutes before we get into HR1?
Sure.
I did want to, Steve, you good?
Yeah.
Okay, great. I did want to talk to Elsa Schaefer. Elsa, you did some of this kind of work as well. Carolina, that was an amazing presentation. I'm sure people have questions. But Elsa Schaefer, did you want to jump in with tell us about the Democracy Centers?
Thanks, Lugo. And this is especially following up on what Daniel and Ray were talking about, and more power to you, Carolina. So Democracy Centers are an outcome of a lot of the thinking Andrea Miller has done with both Reclaim Our Vote, which you've heard a lot about, and with the Center for Common Ground. And the issue is, we don't want to just depart from a lot of these voter suppression areas we've been working in as soon as the election day is over, even the runoff election day. Given the relationships that are developed there and the need for them, we've done maps that have shown that in some of the counties with 70% African Americans, they will have 30% of eligible adults registered to vote. So there's still a lot more work to do there. But we in this last year, we met so many wonderful activists in those areas who don't have a support structure, that we're opening Democracy Centers in 40 areas.
Who is we, Elsa? What group are you with?
Oh, sorry. Reclaim Our Vote, which is a project of the Center for Common Ground. The Center for Common Ground is nonpartisan and nonprofit. Andrea Miller is its founder. And we got to work closely, which was great, with Ray this last, for the runoffs mostly. But also were able to, in our phone banking, give support to Daniel Blackman, who is such an exciting candidate in our mind. And given that Georgia is the sixth highest electricity cost state in the country, boy, do we need Daniel in there and fighting. But there are 4 points to the democracy centers, and we want a physical location, especially as soon as everybody has vaccines, where in a rural area, that for that area alone or for counties surrounding it, we can have a physical presence with Wi-Fi for civic education and civic engagement. We'll help support legislation advocacy, as well as dialogue with federal as well as state and local legislators. And we want it to be very interactive. We've got groups who are signing up to adopt these democracy centers as well. And later in the chat, I'll put in a link. If you have any interest in joining this effort, we have seen so much engagement as soon as the light bulbs go on. And we want to continue to glue together the people who now are got to know each other during this past election and get that energy channeled into very helpful long-term foundation platform. Great.
So are you setting up storefronts? Is that what the democracy centers are?
They're physical storefronts. They will all have Wi-Fi. Students can do homework there in the afternoons when there are not meetings going on. And the point is to have a community center that is about civic engagement.
Unbelievable. That's fantastic. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to sign off. Joel can have the last word, but we'll keep talking. We're going to stop the recording because it changes the nature of things. And then we can just have another kibitzception. There are still 70 people on this call. So pretty amazing after more than an hour and a half. I want to thank Mike Hurst for engineering. We're going to be talking about moving ahead. Steve Caruso, thank you so much. Thank you, everybody, for participating. You folks at PRN, I hope you're able to jump over. Next week, we're going to continue this. We're going to really have a serious state-by-state campaign for the next 4 years. We'll get deeper into it. Steve Rosenfeld, thank you for your reporting. Joel, as I say, we're going to sign off on the recording, and then we'll continue just to talk until people fall over.